Welcome to Day Zero Update for February 2nd, 2025. I'm your host, Chris Elogi.
I'm Brandon Perkins.
And I'm Jen Revigo.
And yeah, it is Groundhog Day again.
Yep.
But yeah, we got plenty of news this week. A bunch of things have happened. A number of games got some dates and updates and news, some delays. We got some things happening later this year. And just a bunch of developer news as a bunch of things has happened there. But yeah, some neat and important stuff here. So we'll get to that stuff a little bit later. We do that. We'll talk about what we've been playing. And I will kick it off here with been playing some Tales of Iron 2, Whiskers of Winter, the sequel to the indie 2D like platforming Souls-like. It was a very cool game. This one kind of takes a lot of those same kind of ideas and brings it to, I think it's a new story. It feels like it's very influenced by Game of Thrones. The game starts with a king who has had a bastard son and sort of sends them off to whatever this area is called. I think everyone's called it. It's like a like the winter something. Almost like the like wall camp that the Jon Snow goes to at the last part of Game of Thrones. And as a baby, he's brought up there as the Lord's son of that area. And you also get a bit of a story about how the enemy, they're like the, I don't know, the hated enemy of the rats were these bats. And the rats ended up winning and trying to kill them all off. But as luck would have it, they would, at least some would get away, and stay away for long enough time that the rat people of this time don't really know anything about that stuff. And so, yeah, the way the game starts is you are kind of, grown up a good bit, have been raised up to be sort of, you know, the king's heir, or the lord's heir, who is sort of going on a training mission with his father and, you know, taking on some enemies and such to keep some of the riffraff away from the castle or whatever this area is called. And then as you are sort of coming back and getting settled, the in the middle of the nights, the bats sort of have attacked the castle, killed most of the people. They killed the Lord, your father and all that, and most of the other people, and sort of you are trying to deal with this with the knowledge that you have. And yeah, the main thing you end up doing early on is taking on this boss. And so yeah, the neat thing is that they have bats, and then they have sort of big bats, I would say, that are kind of their dragons. That is a kind of a cool way of using the this motif of having, you know, anthropomorphic animals and all that as sort of the main citizens of this world. And so, yeah, that was a tough fight. You do have an initial, like, you get the shit beat out of you by a boss moments, but you get sort of saved and you get to like a proper fight as you're trying to save the people you can. And that was a tough fight. It took me a good like 45 minutes to an hour of just retrying it. Cause yeah, it is a proper Souls-like in that way. But there's no RPG aspect to this. You're kind of the same power, but it's the equipment you get that gets more powerful. So a bit more like a Monster Hunter kind of vibe there on that stuff. But yeah, the interesting thing is you start with a bunch of weapon options and gear options. But once everybody gets wiped out, you kind of lose all that. That kind of leads you to a bit of a reset because you're kind of just you and your uncle who have survived and are trying to build a new base of operations. And so like you get the option of like going to find a new smith to build weapons for you and all that kind of stuff, or going for a new chef who will give you some more health options and I assume like stat buffs as well with that stuff. But I went for the smith to get some more options for building weapons and such. That is pretty well done. To go up to this land of the frogs to find a smith that you've heard about who is well known, and they are dealing with the I don't know if it's the land of the frogs, but he is sort of a big catfish person that has had his wife and two daughters taken. His daughters were also his apprentices, so you're kind of going with him on his quest to take out these frogs and such, and you kind of have a little bit of a co-op session there with that, as he's doing some attacks on occasion while you're doing your stuff, and you're fighting a lot of frogs that have a good bit of variety to them. There's some that are basic that have, you know, spears and such to attack you, and others that have shields, and I guess some bigger dudes that have more advanced weaponry. But you also go through this underground area that has spiders in it that are pretty tough for what they are, because they shoot webs from across the screen, kind of stuff that you have to dodge, and can be tough because when they first sort of introduce them, you fight one and then you fight, once you beat them, two more spawn in. And so you get like a taste of how quickly the things can get chaotic in that. So I work through that area and get to the point where your buddy gets kidnapped by the frogs. And as you're in the process of trying to rescue him, he ends up getting killed and you see his head get thrown in your direction. So then you have to take on the big boss, who is essentially this spear-throwing frog that is riding on a big, like, bullfrog-type dude that has a shield. Almost kind of like a two-part shield, one on each arm, that he can push together for a bigger shield kind of thing. And that took me a while to get through. It was just a very tough fight. But eventually you kind of got all the phases and how to counter most everything with that. So that ended up being a pretty fun fight. And that's kind of where I'm at. Sort of on the way back, you kind of find other frogs that are other people, frogs and some other people that kind of take over the little town that was there, that was empty, but you kind of get a smith there. So you can kind of start building some weapons and such, which I did. I was able to, with all the stuff I was able to grab materials and such, build most of the weapons that they had. There's a few types that I don't have the materials for, but was able to do that and build out my gear and all that. And that's where I'm at, in a pretty good place. You have a lot of elemental bonuses for these weapons and gear that's good against certain types of elements of attacks and such. You get the start getting some spell stuff that you can do, where I get this ability to kind of freeze an enemy for a handful of seconds so I can get some attacks in real quick, that kind of stuff. So it seems really good so far. It's been a lot of fun to play with. I've also been playing some more Ys Memoir, The Oath in Belgana, where I've gotten out of the big like two-part dungeon where you go through these caves and then you get sent down to the lava dungeon that is kind of a whole lot that is going on there. Managed to finally get out of that and then kind of get back up and yet deal with a lot of story stuff because a lot of things have been going on and Dougie shows back up and pieces out again. So that's been fun dealing with that. Also been playing some Sniper Elite Resistance that is on Game Pass, as well as PlayStation, Xbox, and PC. That's been really nice. It has a much better start to it than Sniper Elite 5 did, where it kind of had a more, subdued kind of intro that did not seem very focused on sniper stuff, where you kind of had a lot more short range opportunities and, stealth situations that were in that first stage that just felt like it was not what I wanted out of Sniper Elite.
Yeah.
This one initially sets you up in a big sniper nest, because you're at this dam that the allies want to bomb, but they have the Axis have big flak cannons there to take them down. So you're sent in to take out the two flak cannons, as well as set up the dam for blowing up. So you're initially set up in kind of a sniper nest on top of this building. So you're able to immediately start taking some good shots at enemies and kind of getting some good X-ray vision shots. And there's, I shot a guy and blew up his testicles. So that's the the way that you want to start that game.
Yep.
Which they give you an achievement for that. I think it's called Das Nuts.
Mm-hmm.
I think it has to be shot up over 100 meters away for that. So that was a fun time. Also blew up a bunch of their heads and such, caved in their skulls and all that fun stuff. That is pretty well done. Basically to the point where they started kind of being alerted by some of the shots I was taking. So that's been fun. Kind of got that all done. Got to sneak around a bit and take out enemies. Luckily, it lets you do save states, so you can try out some things if you're not sure where all these Nazis are at. They do show up on the mini-map as like a big circle of like, here's the general area they're in. And so you can kind of use either a sniper rifle or some binoculars to tag them, essentially, and mark them on your map so you can see them when they're walking around. So I had a few that were inside buildings and whatnot that were a little harder to find, but for the most part, did not have too much trouble there. But yeah, the second stage is kind of a more enclosed map. It's kind of this enclosed city with a big wall around it that the Nazis have holed up in. You're kind of looking for this guy, either this guy or his notes that you have like a few areas to look in potentially for important information to keep out of the Nazis' hands.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's kind of the most hitman of the stages I've seen so far, because it's kind of an enclosed area and you got people kind of doing their rounds and such. Doesn't necessarily have the clockwork nature of the way the Hitman stages go, where things happen and there's a progression for certain characters. Maybe there is in some way, but I've not really seen anything to that degree. But there is a good bit of exploration and kind of second and third ways to get around, depending on how you want to do things. So yeah, I've been going around taking sniper shots where I can, especially trying to use their mechanics for things like sound masking, where you have machines make a noise or whatever that can mask your sniper shots to minimize the amount of people that will be aggroed by it, and kind of come over and explore, investigate and see what's going on, as well as, picking up people's bodies and tossing them in high grass and whatnot. So yeah, this has felt like a much better game than Sniper Elite 5 was, at least at the beginning. I didn't really play much more of that. But this one kind of gets to the punch right away, so that's been a lot of fun. And then the other game I've been playing is Citizen Sleeper 2, which is also on Game Pass, as well as PlayStation, Xbox, Switch, and PC. I think you are playing as characters from the first game. Your character is a sleeper that has been in the hands of this character named Lane, who Seems like a very powerful, rich guy who has some plans for you. But you're in the process of like trying to reboot you, for whatever plan that he has. Your buddy Seraphin shows up to kind of knock him out for a bit and kind of get you out of there. Managed to get to his ship and escape and land at another space station that, they're kind of, trying to stay ahead of Lane, for this. And the, from there, you're kind of doing what you do in the first game, which is you're kind of doing some very basic activities and job stuff, trying to accrue some credits and some gas and, supplies and such, for your ship. Then you get and you find out, oh, we've got this fuel line that's busted, so we need a new fuel line. And so you meet up with a guy that's like, okay, I will get you this, but you need to do a job for me, which is to go to this derelict ship that is in pretty crappy condition, and you need to get this ship core out of it, kind of thing. And, you know, you get a person that approaches you, offering some help for this, and you get decisions that you can make for that kind of stuff. And you have some, at least on this ship, you get some contract work you can do, which also involves sort of clearing out abandoned ships and getting materials or whatever you're trying to do there, as well as, you know, hanging out in certain areas and trying to get jobs done and raising money and, you know, accomplishing various goals that'll throw at you from time to time. So a lot of similar gameplay concepts. There's no hacking like there was in the first game, at least not so far, where you would hit a button and be able to kind of see nodes of computers and stuff hack into, potentially get data that way. There's nothing like that. There's a map system, which I think is mostly just for the contract stuff. Where you go to other areas, and that's a whole neat idea where you need to have fuel and supplies because you're going to spend time over there that you're using your dice and all that for accomplishing these different goals, like shutting down transponders and all this kind of stuff. So it seems really cool so far. Looking forward to playing some more of it, but yeah, I managed to get to essentially like where it seems like the game will open up as you get to, say, a next space station, because you managed to get out of the previous one just in time before you have a timer that tells you how many more days you have of before supposedly this bad guy will come after you. So yeah, that's been pretty good. But yeah, that's what I've been doing. So how about you, Brandon? What have you been doing?
Well, as for me, I have been still playing God of War Ragnarok, and honestly, I'm kind of impressed at how that game still finds ways to introduce new mechanics long into the game when you think you're getting close to the end. It's like, nope, you still got a whole bunch of games still ready to play. The game recently introduced the Dropner Spear, which is essentially this spear that's more or less based on like the type of spear that like Spartan soldiers would use. In fact, even Kratos himself says, you know, the spear is the first weapon that a Spartan boy is trained to use. And what's unique about it is that because it's made using the Dropner ring, which was this ring that could like multiply itself, every time you have, because you have the spear, you can actually like throw infinite spears. Theoretically, you actually have to, you can only like throw up like a 5 at a time, because once they're out in the open, you can then detonate them like explosives. And it also has like a traversal aspect where you like, you know, like poke it into like holes in the side of cliffs and use it to climb and stuff like that. It's really cool. That game still finds ways to astound me in various ways, but yeah, that game is still really, really good. I've also been playing Fallout New Vegas here on my computer, and it's been kind of an adventure getting that game to work, because Fallout New Vegas, famously, because Obsidian was only given a few months to make the game, so when it came out, it was infamously buggy. Because of that, you know, if you play it outside of just out of the box, it's going to be an absolute, it's going to be a bit of a shit show, frankly. But being able to like put in some graphical mods and some bug fixes and stuff. And, you know, I played this game like a couple years ago, and being able to play this on my computer with all these graphical upgrades and stuff, allowing me to replay this game with fresh eyes. Remembering why this game is so good and why it's considered, you know, one of the pinnacles of modern gaming. Also reminding me why you should never play this game the way you're playing like a Bethesda Fallout game, like Fallout 3 or 4, because unlike in Fallout 3 or 4, New Vegas was made in the spirit of the original Fallout games, meaning that the game does not scale its difficulty to you. You scale yourself to the game's difficulty. Once you leave the town that you start in, they basically tell you, hey, just so you know, you're going to want to stick to the roads because it's bad news if you try and go somewhere else. Well, in a normal like Bethesda RPG, that would just be like their way of saying, oh yeah, just, you know, it's like, oh, don't go do this cool thing. No, in Fallout New Vegas, it is very much warranted, because if you go off the roads even just a little bit, you will be assaulted by super mutants or ghouls or raiders, or more often than not, a swarm of giant insects that will just kill you in an instant. But, you know, that's the spirit of original Fallout. You get a wide open space, but that also means that you can very easily run into something that you are way underpowered for. But, yeah. That's what I've been playing. So, Darren, what about you?
Yeah, I can't talk about what I've been playing, so I'll just go ahead and talk about my brain food, which has been Madden. Won the Super Bowl today. Not much has changed there. It's the one thing that I really wish they did, even though it's also sort of a praise of mine, is I enjoy that they have alternative forms of commentary. They have three different commentary teams in the game, but I wish you can choose to like mix and match the people that are there. You know, Brandon Godden and Charles Davis have been doing Madden for a number of years now. I really enjoy Mike Tirico and Greg Olsen. And then there's Kate Scott and Brock Heward. And I wish, like, I can trade, like, you know, the commentary sometimes. Like, I want Kate Scott and Greg Olsen. Like, that would be nice. And then Mike Tirico and then, you know, whoever it may be. And especially when you do bigger games like the Super Bowl or the Pro Bowl, which isn't even really a game anymore. In fact, they've changed it into events, which I think is pretty cool. That's one thing that I think is low hanging fruit that I wish they would try to figure out. I think I'll be able to talk about the games that it's going to be a while. So yeah, that's pretty much it for me. Sorry.
All right, so yeah, let's get to some news. We got some subscription news here. For PS Plus, we have the essential lineup for the month, along with some extra news here. For the month here, let's see. For the PS5, there is Payday 3, the newest game in that series that's had a very rough launch. I don't know what the state of it is lately, but I assume it has to be better in shape, so maybe that'll be an all right one for people that are into those kind of games. So there you go for that. For PS5 and PS4, there's High on Life, which is the game from the Rick and Morty. Which then had a falling out because the one guy got called out as a creep with allegations and such, and essentially removed from the game. So. But what you got here is a very, let's say, silly first-person shooter thing.
Mm-hmm.
Where you kind of end up on this planet that has all these very Rick and Morty-esque creatures and characters and such, and your gun also talks and all that. So that one's a pretty decent time.
Mm-hmm.
And the last one here for PS5 and PS4 is Pac-Man World Repack, the remake of the PlayStation platformer, which was Pac-Man's first 3D platformer.
Mm-hmm.
I think they made at least one other one after that. But yeah, that one's pretty solid. So yeah, happened to be three of these that I've never had before. So I played High in Life on the Xbox, and that seemed like a fine enough game. So yeah, that's an all right lineup there. That'll be live on February 4th here on Tuesday. And alongside this, they also announced that, as I say here, as many of our players are currently playing on PS5 and have shifted towards redeeming and accessing PS5 titles for the monthly games and catalog benefits, PlayStation Plus is also evolving with this trend and will focus on offering PS5 titles through the monthly games and game catalog benefits starting January 2026.
Mm-hmm.
As we shift to PS5, PS4 games will no longer be a key benefit, will only be occasionally offered on PlayStation Plus monthly games and game catalog starting January 2026.
Mm.
We may still provide titles that can be playable on both PS4 and PS5 consoles after this date. Please note this won't affect the PS4 monthly games that you have already redeemed on PS Plus.
Mm-hmm.
You'll continue to have access to games you've already redeemed as long as you remain a member. For game catalog, PS4 games will still be available to play until it leaves the catalog as part of our monthly refresh.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, that seems like an interesting change. Not really too surprising, because at this point, the amount of games coming out for PS4 only these days is pretty minimal. But there still are some here and there, mostly like Japanese remasters or collections that sometimes are just PS4 only. But this is pretty decent. Pretty decent lineup, and the news seems fine enough. Still got almost a year's heads up on that, so yeah, we'll still get probably plenty of games that you can also play on PS4. So there you go. I don't know if you have anything to add, Brandon.
No, not really. That High on Life game is okay. Honestly, though, it's just the most annoying part of that game is the weapons themselves, because they all talk and they never stop talking.
Yeah.
Like, ever.
Yeah, I mean, like, that's also the point of the game. But yeah, I get that it's a choice that you got to live with or not. But yeah, I played High on Life on it when it was on Xbox Game Pass for a little bit. I stopped for whatever reason. I don't remember. But, you know, part of it is I'm not big on first-person games to begin with. So Payday 3 also does not appeal to me. I've never heard of Pac-Man World Repack. I don't actually know what this is. That being said, I enjoyed a lot of the different kinds of remixes for Pac-Man to begin with. And this might be like it's worth trying.
Yeah. You know how everybody made 3D platformers on the PS1? Namco made one as well for Pac-Man.
I see.
Yep.
That's basically what it is. It's decent enough. But depending on what age you played it at, you know, you might have a ton of nostalgia for it.
Mm.
I just remember being like, okay, that's a decent one of those, but there's, you know, a handful of others I'd rather play ahead of that. But from what I've seen, that collection, the remaster is pretty well done. So there you go. It's another platformer you can play for now until more come out. But speaking of subscription news, Nintendo Switch Online Plus expansion pack got a new game for the N64 app, which is Ridge Racer 64. Speaking of Bandai Namco, in case you did not know, there was a Ridge Racer game that released on the Nintendo 64, and it was pretty decent.
Yep.
That system was weird for some of these kind of games, because there was a Wipeout that came out on the 64 as well.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, obviously got like a Resident Evil 2, I think, was on there, and some Tony Hawk stuff, like things that were better associated with the PS1, just generally tech-wise, but they also came to N64 later on at some point, and some of them were pretty good, some were not quite as good, but this is one of those that's supposed to be pretty good still.
Mm-hmm.
So that's one you can check out for some more, you know, 3D racing fun on the N64 stuff.
Mm.
There was not too many of those on the N64, at least good ones. There you go. That one's available now. You can check it out.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I do remember a Ridge Racer game on the 64. I just don't remember if it was good. I do remember playing the PlayStation one, and I'm sure like it's the same version, but like you said, there's been a lot of inconsistency between games that were good on the PlayStation or good on the N64 and vice versa, so That makes it a little bit complicated, but yeah, it's good to see that it's there. Most of my years playing racing games were actually on the N64, so I'm hoping like this ended up being a fun one. I remember having a lot of fun with the Rush games. I remember something Motolista that was also really fun. So yeah.
Yeah, I think that was a PS2 game, like a Capcom racing game.
Oh, sorry, it wasn't Motolista. It was a Top Gear Rally. That was the one I had.
Yeah, so there was a. It was easy to put out a lot of racing games. Not many of them were all that good, but. So yeah, there you go for that. We also got an update for No Man's Sky. It is time to ring in the new year.
Yeah.
The Chinese New Year, they're ringing that in with a new update called Worlds Part 2.
Mm-hmm.
They put out the last year a big update called Worlds Part 1. They made some notable upgrades to the game. This kind of continues on with that. As they talk about here, saying Worlds Part 2 allows us to push the boundaries of our engine with new technology. Mm-hmm. Across the universe, we're adding billions of new solar systems and trillions of new planets, introducing new biomes and terrains without changing what people already love about the game. Mm. Which I saw Sean Murray on Twitter retweeting a lot of people joking like, oh, thanks for doing this. I almost ran out of stars and planets, so now they got more. It says here, the team is extremely busy on Light No Fire. Each time we push our engine to new places, though, we have this urge to share it with the community with No Man's Sky. So yeah, they've put a lot of work into the new game, and that seems like all that work is kind of coming back to No Man's Sky as well. As you said, there are gas giants that are 10 times bigger than their biggest planets previously. A lot of the oceans that can be several kilometers deep, which, yeah, like a lot of the water was not all that deep to get into. It was a lot more like, oh, this is a big pond or a lake or something like that, not really much of an ocean. A new lighting system, new caustics, new light shafts, and the deeper that you explore, the darker it gets in the water. We've had these, every element of our lighting has been rewritten. Shadows show more details, like flickers through the leaves. Caves are dark and immersive. Oceans now reflect the clouds and stars, create these beautiful sunsets and night skies. So that's really cool. They link to the full patch notes, which is where it gets ridiculous as they explain everything in pretty good detail. It seemed like they have bigger mountains versus just, hilly, rocky areas, sort of actual high mountains kind of stuff to it, a lot more foresty areas and all that kind of stuff that looks really cool. Yeah, as I mentioned, the oceans, they have more options for organizing your inventory to automatically sort it. Some good ways instead of having to manually do that yourself. Yeah, they have huge gas worlds have formed across the galaxy, bring their own unique environments and materials. These giant planets are characterized by immense atmospheric pressure, tremendous gravity, and volatile atmospheres. Each is orbited by a collection of moons, which that's pretty cool. The screenshots they have here have like giant rocks getting blown around, all that kind of stuff. So that looks like it's pretty cool. They had some new story stuff to this. A new narrative-driven mission deepens the lore of the universe and expands upon the story of Atlas, Atlantid, and the robotic autophage life forms. So more stuff there. There's just Deepwater Guardians. You sometimes provoke, if you're dredging the seas for fish, will provoke a Deepwater Guardian to emerge from the depths and defend its watery children. Travelers who defeat this vengeful creature will earn the unique Child of Aquarius title. So there you go. More fishing stuff. Yeah, more dense jungles. More environmental hazards. All kinds of fun stuff here. Yeah, it seems like they added like sea horses. Sort of more populations of creatures and such. Enhance the water, more anomalous creatures. Yeah, there's the abyss and the underwater stuff. Lots of good variety here. Giant squids, holy crap. That's cool. Manta rays, And I'm like halfway through this list, so there's a lot more you can look at in there. So yeah, there you go. Another big mm-hmm. update for No Man's Sky as they continue to show off. Mm. So yeah, there you go. Mm-hmm. Let's get to some more news. This mm-hmm. also happened. EA is celebrating the 25th anniversary of The Sims by releasing mm. The Sims Legacy Collection and The Sims 2 Legacy Collection mm-hmm. That are out now on Steam, Epic Games Store, and the EA app for $20 each, or purchased together for $40 for that. So yeah, you get a bunch of DLC with each one. I'm assuming it's probably not everything, because I assume there were some licensed packs too in there that probably did not make it over. But they do have some of that stuff in there. But yeah, those are two very influential PC games in the turn of the century mm-hmm. here that kind of opened up the possibility of the audiences reached with PC games to a lot of girls and women. Mm-hmm. You had that kind of game, as well as a lot of guys got into it because you could torture Sims or just, you know, play around with it in some really fun ways that there was nothing really like it since like Sim City, mm-hmm. as far as like managing stuff. But instead of a whole city, you manage just a household of people. And that's mm-hmm. That's a pretty cool reason to kind of bring these back and make them more accessible than they have been.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, there you go.
Yeah, pretty cool thing. We all know EA needs a win. And
yeah,
this was an easy one to get, especially since, like, you know, both The Sims and The Sims 2, like, we're talking about genre-defining games that aren't only those, but The Sims 2, at least in my mind, has withstood the test of time and is easily one of, like, the top games ever. So, you know, obviously all these expansions were part of their business back then. And it's just really cool seeing a lot of these that existed. Like, you know, I knew about The Sims 2 Pets. I knew about the Holiday Party Pack. I had no idea about the H&M fashion stuff. And I used to work at H&M. And I used to work at EA. So I was like, okay, cool. Look at this clash of worlds here. But yeah, it's pretty interesting to see. I don't know if this is something that I'll dabble in, just because, you know, I don't really play PC games. But yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the Sims was especially pretty wild game to have come out, because I remember, I think the Drew Carey Show had a bit in The Sims where the characters are all put in there, and they did part of an episode in there in a fun way. Mm-hmm. So yeah, that was a huge part of like nerd and tech culture at that point.
Oh yeah, when it comes to that, like EA absolutely loves doing things in the real world, and yeah, they do it with all their properties now. But The Sims was definitely a big one there.
Yeah. So yeah, there's that for you. You can check that out. Mm-hmm. Let's get to the bad side of things. The Warner Brothers. They've not been had much mm-hmm. luck lately.
Nope.
And maybe their most successful thing in recent memory was seemingly the Multiverses launch, relaunch at least. Which was accompanied by like a whole weird gap where they decided to take it down after the quote unquote beta of the original release that mm-hmm. they claim, like, oh, thank you for participating in this beta, we'll, you know, be back with the full version later on, instead of kind of letting it whimper on, because it I think that that original game had a weird way of unlocking stuff where people could kind of grind through it pretty quickly, and mm-hmm. you know, faster than the devs had the ability to add new stuff and kind of deal with what sort of feedback they were getting. So they came back and I believe upgraded from Unreal Engine 4 to Unreal Engine 5 and all that, and did pretty well early on for a couple of months, and then it seems like the audience has kind of dropped off a good bit.
Mm-hmm.
Especially due to, say, a continued lack of characters being added to it on a regular basis and further content and all that kind of stuff. And so yeah, they announced earlier this week that the upcoming season 5 that will start on here on the 4th, February 4th on Tuesday, will be the final season before the game ends service on May 30th. It will continue to be playable offline after May 30th for users who have downloaded and installed the latest version of the game, but the game itself will no longer be available to download via digital stores. Mm-hmm. I assume that means that new people won't be able to grab it. But if you have it in your library, you'll be able to download it. And they say Season 5 adds DC's Aquaman and Looney Tunes' Lola Bunny as new playable characters.
Mm-hmm.
You can unlock all this content through gameplay. Starting from when they made this announcement, real money transactions will no longer be available for multiverses. Any remaining Gleamium, which was the premium currency, or character tokens can still be used to access in-game content until Season 5 ends.
Mm-hmm.
And from what I've heard, people that bought like the premium edition of the game originally, that you got enough tokens that you still can't use them all. Mm-hmm. They have not added enough characters to unlock with that. So that's kind of a sign of the way that this game's development has gone.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe I've also heard this, like the relaunch of this on Unreal Engine 5 has not gone great, because I believe like the way people have talked about the feel of the combat and all that changed pretty drastically moving to a new engine, in a way that you could probably get used to, but did not feel as good for people that like the original version.
Yeah,
which is the thing you definitely don't want to do with one of these kind of Smash clones.
Mm-hmm.
When people kind of get into a way of playing it, changing that willy nilly tends to not go well. That's a game that will be going offline on May 30th, and you'll have to download it before then if you want to keep playing it. So yeah, there you go.
Mm.
Yeah, I mean, obviously a bit of a bummer if you really liked Multiverses, especially if you played it during its really hot early access period. Unfortunately, yeah, it's gone by the wayside, and that's sad to see, especially since, like, it seems like Warner Brothers, you know, or not really Warner Brothers, but the development team behind the game really seemed like they put enough love into it, adding as much IP as they could. They could have added more, you know, they could have really went Space Jam with it, but it is what it is there. And, like, yeah, the reason why it was a flash in the pan was because the game was actually pretty solid. So it does suck to see this happen. But at the same time, I'm also glad that they're making it offline. It isn't clear to me if, you know, you'll be able to play it offline with like all of the stuff if you didn't buy it all. But yeah.
They do have an FAQ here. I'm trying to see if you can still unlock stuff. Let's see. I'm not sure. Let's see. Let's see. And there's so many questions here. I don't know which one's great one for that.
I think like the original version had like what, something like 12 characters, but obviously like that roster is really expanded, and you know, if you didn't buy them all, then you kind of stuck. But I don't know.
Yeah, I assume it may be. I don't know. Players will be able to enjoy the game offline for the foreseeable future by installing, downloading the latest version of the game during Season 5, logging in before May 30th. After logging in, a local save file will automatically be created and connected to a PlayStation Network, Microsoft Store, Steam, or Epic Game Store account to enjoy the game offline with all earned and purchased content moving forward. So that seems to be suggesting that you'll have to have done that before May 30th.
Yeah, and the main thing is they already turned off microtransactions. So if you didn't have it now, all you can do is just get what you originally had.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm just trying to see. I think it might be anything that might be limited, but I assume as part of this, they'll make everything available to unlock at some point.
Yeah, hope. They don't have to. There's no real benefit for it, but yeah, it's a weird story.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. We'll get to some more stories here. Some more bad news. Date Everything has been delayed to June. It was supposed to be coming out Valentine's Day, but it seems like they still needed more time. Here, putting out a message saying, since we last updated you on development, we've been extremely hard at work finishing work on Date Everything. At this point, I can confidently say we have reached that point where the game is complete to a standard that we feel reached our goals with no compromise in our bonkers artistic vision. However, I was too confident that we could properly test all of the wild amount of content and pathing that exists in this massive game. And unfortunately, we ran out of time on our current and yet so appropriate release date of February 14th, 2025. Our bug list is finally starting to dwindle down as QA gets through the labyrinthine story pathing. but to submit our game in the States with so many outstanding glitches would be doing you a disservice. We have our final release date set for June 2025. And while it isn't quite as sexy a date as Valentine's Day, we hope we can bring sexiness to June evermore. And yes, you can actually date the glitches. Their name is Daemon, and I am currently in love-hate relationship with them. So I assume they will release it on June 9th. Go for a 69 joke there for that. So, yeah, sad that they couldn't make it their date tier. But better
Do
to
we know
delay
if
and finish
this
up.
Game is anything more than just a visual novel? Like, is it more than just, you know, making decisions? Is there actual gameplay in this?
I believe it is mostly just
characters. It's mostly is just a visual novel.
Okay, I'm wondering like how they still have QA issues. I mean, maybe the staff is really really small, but I'm like, okay.
Mm. Well, I believe they have 100 characters you can romance, and so like story pathing through all that stuff can probably be a challenge.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. It's definitely a lot bigger than I thought it was, but yeah, that's lame to hear, especially since this game would have been perfect on Valentine's Day.
So yeah, that's sad, but as long as the game gets the proper amount of love, it should be a good time when it does come out. So we'll see that at another time. But speaking of June, we now have a date for Summer Game Fest 2025. The showcase will be happening on June 6th at 2 p.m. Pacific time, 5 p.m. Eastern time at the YouTube Theater in Los Angeles. You'll be able to watch it anywhere that can stream video, it seems. YouTube, Twitch, Twitter, TikTok, Steam, and various international partners. They'll have public ticket sales going this spring. 2-hour showcase and all that, as well as there will be Day of the Devs Summer Game Fest edition after the showcase, as well as other stuff going on around there. So that'll be fun. Nice to have a date for that. As a, it's been a hell of a year, especially in LA. That'll be nice for them to have a sign of people kind of returning and seeing the good parts of LA. Survived the awful fires that have been going on down there and are still going on down there. Still having some issues there.
Yeah, it'll be pretty interesting. I mean, by then, like, a lot of the hoopla surrounding a lot of the fires should already be, like, settled because they, you know, cities typically recover quickly, and LA is one of the biggest ones in the United States, so obviously they should be able to work on that. But yeah, it's good that we have this date early. It's funny because I do a lot of my prep for a lot of these events, you know, before the year even starts. And I did see that, June 6th was already a booked date for, the theater event. So, that's good to hear. And then, yeah, you know, Play Days was something that we got invited to last year, except that we were only able to go for the latter 2 days versus all three. So, yeah, hopefully we get to go again and get to cover even more games than before. But yeah, it's good to see that a lot of the stuff that should be settled is already like there. And you know, if this is the event that's going to really replace E3, it's good to know that it's becoming reliable.
Yeah, so that'll be fun. I'll have some fun stuff there. Let's see some more news. Microsoft has announced that Forza Horizon 5 will be coming to the PS5 in spring 2025, sometime later this year. Who knows? I believe they are. Yeah, this being the port is being developed by Panic Button in partnership with Turn 10 Studios and Playground Games. We'll have the same content as the Xbox and PC releases of the game. Previously released car packs, as well as the Hot Wheels and Rally Venture expansions, will be available for purchase. I believe they're going to have cross-play and all that as well. They're also working on special new free content update for all platforms called Horizon Realms. That'll give players a chance to explore a curated collection of some of the community's favorite previously released evolving worlds, alongside some other surprises. So they'll be talking about that in the near future, but Yeah, nice to see that Microsoft is willing to go wherever they need to get these games out there. Because Forza Horizon 5 did really well for them on Xbox and PC. And there's definitely a market for these kind of open world realistic racing games on the PlayStation 5. Yeah, especially after, I don't think there's any Need for Speed or the Crew games coming out anytime soon. So this is a good time for them to kind of get out there and make a lot more money on this.
Yeah. I mean, EA can only sell Burnout Paradise to so many different places. And it's Horizon, Forza Horizon 5 is definitely like, you know, the next level when it comes to that stuff. And obviously Microsoft has a plan in regards to its multi-platform development. And it's interesting seeing it, you know, continue. Obviously, as an Xbox owner, you want to see more there. But I'm sure we have a 6 coming
soon. Yeah, I believe they are doing this mostly to kind of bring out some more money before the license they have for the various stuff in the game is going to be expiring and it gets delisted.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Probably in the next year or so.
Their investments.
So, yeah. I assume a 6 will be coming out at some point because this is the longest gap they've had between games for that. So, yeah, will be interesting to see if they have that on PS5 at launch for the next game. We'll see. But yeah, speaking of Microsoft news, we did find out that there's more developers working on Gears of War E-Day that Microsoft announced last year. Along with the Coalition, People Can Fly will also be working on the game. They served as lead developer on Gears of War Judgment and a co-development partner on the original Gears of War trilogy, so not really a huge surprise on that, but kind of interesting because that's been a game that's they've been working on for quite a while since Gears of War 5, I think it was, as people were kind of wondering what the hell was going on with the new game. But seems like they have more help than just the main team at the Coalition. So yeah, that it's nice to see at least People Can Fly will have something new coming out that will assuredly do pretty well for them. Mm-hmm. So that'll be a fun to see. I believe they still don't have a date for this, so I think it might be this year, but I don't know that they even had a date for that, like a year. So maybe it'll be next year, I don't know. We'll see. But yeah, good news for People Can Fly. Get some more steady work.
Yeah. I am glad they are, because they are a talented studio. It's just market's not been too good to them.
Yeah. Especially when you got the Outriders, where Square Enix, I believe, still hasn't paid out royalties to them because they have not made their money back on the game. You know, it doesn't help when you put it on Game Pass at launch, but yeah, that happens. So yeah, there you go for that. And let's get to some Sony news. They announced MLB The Show 25. Formally, it'll be out March 18th this year. Also announced the cover athletes, and sort of this is the 25th anniversary, not the 25th, 20th anniversary for this part of the series. The series itself goes back to the MLB games they put out on the PS1. I forget what the first one was, like 97 or 98. But they count that as separate, even though it's the same people making it. But MLB The Show 25 will have 3 cover athletes. Paul Skeens of the Pittsburgh Pirates. He was sort of the best pitcher coming out of the minors and sort of made a big show of it. Ellie De La Cruz, who's been a big hitter for the Reds. And Gunnar Henderson, a big-time catcher for the Baltimore Orioles. I believe he's a catcher. Yeah, it's a great choice of 3 athletes for this. 3 of the best, brightest stars in the game. Young stars, at least. They have announced that. I believe also part of this announcement is that it will not be on subscription services in 2025. So it will not be on Game Pass. as well as it is only releasing on the PS5, Xbox Series X and S, and the Switch, so no PS4, Xbox One versions. They will have early access on March 14th for people who pre-order the Digital Deluxe Edition. So yeah, we're gonna. I'm looking forward to more information on this. They seem to have plans for some more big changes to the game itself, especially like Diamond Dynasty mode. They've announced they're going to get rid of, I think it was seasons they were talking about, making a big change there. That would be less on FOMO content and more just letting people unlock a bunch of content and play it when they want to play it kind of thing. But I believe they're also working on some more changes for some of the single player content and Road to the Show and such. So that'll be cool. We'll see. And interesting that they are not going to be on Game Pass anymore. So I imagine MLB published those games directly on the Xbox and Switch. So I imagine they've seen the numbers kind of get to where they like them to be and kind of now want people to just pay money for the game, which I'm sure a good portion of them will.
Mm-hmm.
So that's it's an interesting strategy now.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, pretty cool to see. You know, some of you do know that I used to work on a now defunct mobile baseball game. So, you know, when it comes to the MLB, like, I'm definitely used to the way they work. And yeah, I agree with Chris that, you know, maybe they saw the Xbox numbers and they just didn't feel like the Xbox Game Pass investment was worth it. But at the same time, it's like, when you're the only MLB game going on, there really isn't much to go off of there. As someone that used to be in on this, it is interesting that they went with three cover athletes. I have gone through similar work with Tap Sports Baseball 21. We had both Juan Soto and Ronald Acuna on our cover. And the reason why we had trouble was because we were dealing with the COVID pandemic, and it was tough to like try to get both the athletes to sign certain things and stuff like that. But and the reason why I think it's, you know, gonna be harder than they think is because I know that SDS also went through their share of layoffs last year. So yeah, kind of feel a little sorry for their CM and marketing team, but obviously, like, you know, a game that's gonna be fully backed by the MLB will have all the support they need, so I'm sure it'll be great. But yeah, like, when it comes to having more than one athlete on your cover at a time, it gets a little haywire, and I wish that staff the best.
Yeah. So yeah, that'll be interesting to see. Let's see here. We got some other news here. Hironobu Sakaguchi has announced that he is a liar. He said Fantasian Neo Dimension was supposed to be his last game, but he said, oh, wait a minute, I got one more in me.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, he's likened that game to Final Fantasy VI as sort of his homage to that. And sort of in the process also said he has one more in him. Yeah, where is it? Yeah, his next project will apparently feel even more closely inspired by one of his old franchise's peak games, which is Final Fantasy VI.
Mm.
Thing is generally going to follow a similar style to my previous works, and it'll be something that can be a successor to Final Fantasy VI in a good way. Our goal is to create something old but new at the same time. It'll be part two of my farewell note, so he's calling this part two of his farewell sort of tour of games. Yeah, he intended for Fantasian to be his final game, but I had too much fun working with the team behind it to actually retire when it was done. Saying, humans are greedy creatures, aren't we? For that reason, I'm currently working on a new project with the same team that worked on Fantasian Neo Dimension.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, that's fun to see that he's still working on more, at least one more game.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, let's see. He said here, in the distant future, or maybe after I've already left this world, I imagine this game will find its meaning. If someone chooses to look into the legacy of either myself or Final Fantasy.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, that'll be interesting to see how that goes. So yeah, there you go.
Yeah, I'm really interested in seeing what happens. Fantasian is a game that I didn't really spend enough time on. I've played it on and off on the Switch, and yeah, I've had fun, but obviously, like, work and life got in the way. But I want to jump back into it, and I've never played Lost Odyssey, so I don't know how good that one is.
Yeah. So yeah, there's that. So we'll see him again in a few years. Let's see, back to PlayStation again, as they have announced that they're kind of backtracking on their whole requiring a PSN login for all of their PC releases. They are going to be allowing a handful of them. Let's see, Horizon Zero Dawn Remastered, Last of Us Part 2 Remastered, and God of War Ragnarok, along with Marvel Spider-Man that just launched, to be played without a PSN account being linked to your account. And they have some special bonuses that you'll get for linking your PSN account to your Steam account for that. So yeah, good news for the people that especially didn't want to do that. But yeah, that'll be interesting to see. I don't think they've gone back and allowed the game to release in the regions that didn't have, you know, full PSN support. I don't know if that will change or not, but that's good for the people that were very much against this. So there you go.
Yeah, I think the main thing here, though, is that we're talking about single player games. You know, when you're talking about a game like Helldivers, where they're released in territories that have, you know, for lack of a better term, worse rights, and, you know, they're interacting with people around the world on the internet, there's a lot of gray area there that's hard to navigate, and I can understand PlayStation sort of wanting to control the ecosystem here. But when we're talking about, like, you know, single-player games like God of War Ragnarok and Spider-Man 2, you know, the bottom line for any of these publishers is they want to get the game out the door and into the hands of players, and whether or not they play them is none of anyone's business, right? I mean, for every single one of these games, we've seen issues with people getting the right patch updates on day one and whatever it may be, and like none of these launches went well. So I don't imagine the being on PSN would make a better or worse experience, so it's good to see that all of these changes are cosmetic.
Yeah, so yeah, there you go on that. We'll get to hear probably the biggest negative news of the week. BioWare, it seems like with the finishing of Dragon Age the Veilguard, it seems like they have made a bunch of changes to the team, particularly to slim down the team, as they are going to be working on Mass Effect 5, and that is not necessarily at the point of development where they need a huge team like they had on Dragon Age the Veilguard at the end.
Yeah.
So they have moved a bunch of the team to other games under EA, and others are sort of in a state of being laid off but can apply for positions at the company. So yeah, kind of one of those weird, not hugely surprising situations, because let's just be honest, Dragon Age, none of their games have sold all that well, especially compared to the sort of contemporary games of their era. You know, Dragon Age 2 came out around the same time as Skyrim, and we know which game did incredibly well there and which one did fine. And EA seems to always expect way better out of these, the Dragon Age games, more than anything else. And
yeah,
that ends up never really working out well for them.
Yeah.
It seems like you maybe would stop expecting them to sell tons of copies, but I don't know.
Yeah. BioWare has really had a troubled time of it over the last decade or so. Other than, you know, the Mass Effect Legendary Edition, which actually was really good, you know, but I mean, that was literally just more or less a remaster, and in one case, a total remake of, you know, the original Mass Effect trilogy. Everything else that they've done, from Anthem to Mass Effect Andromeda to, you know, Dragon Age the Veilguard, which I liked Dragon Age the Veilguard. I quite enjoyed playing it. But you can definitely tell when playing that game that it is something that has gone through like two or three iterations before they finally settled on the version they were going to release. It definitely struggles to find an identity. And it's like its whole opening sequence also is, it's garbage. it's garbage. The rest of the game is really, really good, but the opening sequence of that game is garbage. And honestly, it's just disappointing. But yeah, part of the issue I think is, you know, after the successes of Mass Effect 3 and Dragon Age Inquisition, they just kind of overdid it. They tried to take on far too many projects at once and tried to sort of outsource stuff to, you know, other teams, and it just didn't work. And on top of that, you know, they were having to do these really, you know, these ideas from BioWare's, like, we got to make a live service game, which is what Anthem ended up being, and completely just, you know, collapsing under its own weight. But, you know, I hope that, you know, with this, they'll be able to actually, you know, focus on Mass Effect and actually, you know, put out a good game. Because, you know, with Exodus coming out in the near future, they're going to have some serious competition, especially considering that Archetype, the people making Exodus, is made up of a bunch of former BioWare developers. So, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, this one is, like, hard for me to, like, really put into, like, any sort of, like, digestible fashion. Obviously, like, out of the three of us, Brandon is probably the biggest fan of BioWare. I don't really have that much of a connection to them. You know, that being said, I do know that, you know, Dragon Age is definitely something that has a lot of fans. It definitely has its levels of appreciation. But it was never much of a sales game. You know, and, you know, as Brandon mentioned, like, as far as its development, it saw a lot of hiccups as far as its iterations go. You know, we already talked about the fact that EA wanted BioWare to make this a live service game. And that's hard to do. Sure, like, there's a lot of, like, well-known characters that you can build off of and, you know, perhaps even build on that massively multiplayer online component. But at the end of the day, like, we're talking about a single player game here. And I will say that a lot of EA's published single player stuff as of late has been pretty good. You know, Veilguard was actually, like, critically well accepted. You know, we have both of the Jedi Survivor games. And then even though it's not a full EA game, It Takes Two when game of the year in 2021. So, you know, there definitely is, like, some sort of single player focus here. And then they have noticed the success of IPs like The Last of Us and those kinds of games. And, you know, a lot of people have been moved to Cliffhanger, where they'll be working on the Black Panther game. So, yeah, there definitely is some promise there. But I think, you know, I mean, it's not that I think. The main reason why this happened was because Dragon Age didn't sell well. I believe that their target was 3 million units, and they barely went half of that. And, you know, don't get me wrong, 3 million or even 1.5 million is nothing to sneeze at.
It's not, but the thing is, yeah, the problem is EA keeps giving them these, frankly, kind of bloated expectations for...
Yeah, but the reason why I bring this up is because 3 million isn't exactly a bloated expectation when the game came out on every platform.
Yeah.
That being said, at first, Jedi Survivor was a little bit disappointing, but at the same time, when that game came out, PS5s were impossible to find. Now, I'm not saying everyone has them, but they're a whole lot more accessible, and to see the game still, like, struggle when you're available on every platform is definitely something that they don't want to see, and that definitely sucks. And then, obviously, the jobs are going to be affected. We talked last week about, you know, one of their directors leaving. We didn't know why, because we knew that this game was one that was well-liked. Obviously, it didn't sell up to expectations, but it is what it is there. And the hard thing is, you know, we've talked about EA possibly ruining BioWare if they haven't already, and the rough reality is now they're going to put all their eggs into Mass Effect, and Mass Effect has to be good. But that being said, like, can we actually expect that to happen? Is that even fair? You know, I'm sure there's a lot of people at BioWare who are both old and new who want this to really work out. But, you know, the reality of it is, what can we expect here? Mass Effect Andromeda was both a failure, both critically and, you know, as far as sales goes. And the trilogy actually, like, went well. But the problem is, I think given that there wasn't much growth between, Inquisition and Veilguard, I mean, maybe the well might be dried up with Mass Effect Andromeda moving on to whatever 5 ends up being, and it's tough. Like, these are strong IP, but we don't know how strong they are anymore. And that's a shame because, like, we're talking about a series that made something like N7 Day, where it pretty much made its own marketing. So I hope that they're able to work it out, but with a smaller staff, it's hard to say.
Yeah. And BioWare has been an interesting case because it's a studio that has kind of consistently lost people, whether through layoffs or just people leaving over the last like 10, 15 years, in a way that, the people that are kind of the big people now at the studio were not, during the heyday of the Mass Effect series and Dragon Age games. That's it's kind of just interesting that the way that people think about BioWare's like still having a lot of those big names, and that's not what that studio is anymore. That's not to say they can't do great stuff as well as they've done a good job with the Veilguard. But obviously that's not what EA just wants is just a good game. They want a game that sells really well, if they're going to keep investing in the long-term development that these games tend to require for them, which is why they're working on the new Mass Effects. They're like, well, those games sold really well, for the most part. So we need them to have a home run here. And hopefully they can do that. Because, yeah, their attempt to kind of spin off into a new thing with Andromeda did not go well, for a variety of reasons. But I feel like the team as is, that is remaining, should be more than capable of doing a very good job from what we've seen with Drain, with Veilguard. So yeah, hopefully that ends up working out for them. Otherwise, that might be it for BioWare. So yeah, there you go for that. We'll get to our last two stories here. We have another Sony story that they have appointed Hideaki Nishino as president and CEO of Sony Interactive Entertainment. Effective April 1st, he was previously the sort of platform business group CEO alongside Herman Holst as studio business group CEO. So Holst will still continue to see to serve as CEO of the studio business group and report to Nishino, which seems like probably a good place for him. He seems pretty good at dealing with the studios and kind of encouraging them to do the work that's makes them work best there. And Nishino seems like he does a pretty good job for what he's been doing. So yeah, that's a pretty solid choice there. And so yeah, they'll be reporting to the Sony president, Sony Group Corporation president and chief operating officer and chief financial officer, Hiroki Totoki. Who's stepping down from his position as SIE chairman to become president and CEO of Sony Group Corporation. And I believe also part of that is that, let's see, Lin Tao, who's currently serving as senior vice president of finance and corporate development and strategy for Sony Interactive Entertainment, will step down to become the chief financial officer for Sony Group Corporation, which I believe makes her the highest ranking female in Sony's history, so that is great news there, as their chief financial officer. So yeah, they got some pretty good looking people here, moving up. So yeah, that's kind of the way their corporate structure is going to be, at least for the time being.
I'm not going to pretend I know what any of this entails. Like, the main thing here for me was that, okay, I thought Holst was going to be like the co-dude, and Nishino was there. Again, I'm not going to pretend that I know what's up, but as far as PlayStation goes, not Sony, but PlayStation, I feel like a lot of what they do has been like straying more on the Western side. So I don't know if, having Nishino look over SIE or PlayStation is going to make them a little bit go more east, especially since a lot of those studios have shuttered or don't exist anymore. But yeah, so we'll see what happens. Hopefully it's a good move. PlayStation, you know, when you're number one, there really isn't a whole lot you have to do. And then you deal with the fact that everybody hates you. But, you know, you still have its fans there and stuff.
Yeah. So, yeah, there you go for that. Last up here, we got some cool news from the Video Game History Foundation, who has
very cool news.
Their digital library of magazines and press kits and advertisements and anything else they could find and scan into their database has made that available for people to check out. And yeah, that is pretty awesome.
Yeah, it is. And they've got a whole bunch of stuff. They don't just have magazines. They've also got like production material. They got promo materials, and it's just, it's really cool. It's incredibly cool.
Because I think you said you were looking at a number of magazines there.
Yeah, I was looking at some GamePro, some EGM. I don't know if they've got... Yeah, they got Nintendo Power here. So they do have those. And it looks like... Yeah, you can... Let's see. Yeah, you can... now, whether or not you can look at all of them, I don't know yet.
Yeah, as they've said, it's in early access at this point.
Yeah.
So there's still work to do.
Yeah, there's still work to do. But yeah, there's just a bunch of stuff.
Yeah, and you can search through a lot of it by, you know, search terms. So I saw somebody was, like, looking to see how bad some of this content can be, like, looking for trends to see what the way, say, people in the 90s and 2000s wrote about characters that were maybe trans or... Mm-hmm. Sort of gender bending, and it did not go well.
Nope.
A lot of uses of terms that are pretty offensive in the way that, say, people talk about poison and characters like that.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. Luckily, the one example I saw of that, I think, was from some EGM or OPM. I forget. It was basically somebody responding to their previous article about, like, being, you know, saying that the way they referred to poison is transphobic, and they made a heartfelt apology about that.
Yeah.
Kind of thing. So,
by the way, yeah, just for anybody who wants to know, if you want to go to it, you want to go to they link to library gaming history. That's not where you're going to go to, like, look at stuff. You need to go to archive.gamehistory.org. That's where all of the scans and stuff for this stuff is being kept, if you want to read it. They got a bunch of, like, EGM, they got Game Pro, Game Informer, Game Fan, Mega, let's see, Casual Connect, 3DO Club, stuff like that, and the official Dreamcast magazine, PC Gamer, a bunch of stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, so yeah, there's a bunch of stuff here to check out.
Yeah, it's definitely a cool story. I think a lot of the digital magazines too, you can easily, like, control F them and just, like, you know, find whatever you need to find based on, you know, the issue and what you're looking for. So that's pretty cool. The other thing I wanted to mention is, I don't know why I haven't gone, but the Video Game History Foundation is, like, less than 20 minutes away from me. I should definitely check that out when I have time.
Yeah. So yeah, that is cool. That's something you can check out and kind of see what kind of shitty advertisements were in magazines in the 90s and 2000s.
Mm-hmm.
Because, boy, there was a lot.
Oh, yeah, if you thought people were toxic now, just wait till you see those ads.
Oh yeah, and prepare yourself for how cringe it was too, because there have been whole YouTube channels dedicated to just how insane that, you know, video game advertisements back in the 90s were in both, you know, television also, but especially in magazine publications. Remember, this was the generation that gave us John Romero Is About to Make You His Bitch. Remember that?
Yeah. Like, I forget whether it was Olivia Munn or whoever licking a PSP.
But yep.
No, that stuff was tame compared to a lot of the 90s ads we got in magazines.
Oh, so. Yeah.
Yeah. And even, you know, companies that nowadays you would think would be above that, Nintendo did a bunch of that stuff.
Oh, no, they were pretty risque, too.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, they had things. I remember, I forget, one of the Game Boy models, they had like a, the joke was, it's funny, it's more fun than having a weasel down your pants.
Yep.
And it's like, and it's like, Jesus. Okay, that's a way you can go, I guess. But yeah, it's fun. Kind of look at some of these and see, like, the way things are advertised to people, you know, there's some infamous ones of like Rayman, where he's at a urinal and all the guys that are nearby are like staring at him, like, oh, checking out his package kind of thing. And it's like, no, okay, that's sure. I guess that's a way you go to advertise this platformer, to make it about Rayman's dick, but okay. You know, all that kind of fun stuff that people were trying to figure out. So yeah, that's a cool part of history and seeing, you know, essentially like a whole thing that doesn't exist anymore. Magazines really don't exist anymore in the way that they used to. Nor do the big sites really at this point exist like that. So yeah, it's, you can see sort of, the way things used to be. So yeah, there you go for that. And yeah, I think that's going to end up doing it for the show this week. Thank you to Brandon Denner for joining.
Always.
We'll be back next week in a new year, in a new month. The shortest month, but a very busy month of releases here. As we have Kingdom Come Deliverance 2 is out this week.
Yep.
Rift of the Necro Dancer. There's a couple more games coming out this week. Oh, yeah. Next week will be Civilization 7.
Can't wait to actually talk about stuff.
Yeah.
Civilization 7, Urban Myth Dissolution Center, Afterlove EP. Oh boy, there's even more of these Valentine's Day releases that are gone now. It's just Afterlove EP, The Legend of Heroes, Trails Through Daybreak 2, Tomb Raider 4 through 6 remastered for those days. So yeah, I'll tune back in next week. We'll see which one of these games also gets delayed.
Yeah. And which one of these I'm going to be able to play, because money's kind of tight right now.
Yeah, so, yeah, thank you all for tuning in. If you enjoy the show, if you let friends and family know, they should check it out and select strangers that are also excited for games this month, as there's a bunch of games coming out. So, yeah, thank you all for tuning in. Hope you have a good week ahead. We will see you all next time. Have a good one.
Bye.
See y'all.